So I'm joined by Joe Banks and also by Sophie Cooper now to take a look at the former Avon Coroner's Court just off Stokes Croft in central Bristol, which is now the Lakota nightclub. And it's almost like Marmite. Some people give it rave reviews, like 5-star reviews on TripAdvisor, Sophie. Others, 1 or 0 stars. So there's not a lot in between with Lakota. So do you want to tell us just a little bit about how the nightclub affected you to such an extent that you decided to go to the licensing committee and how close you are living to it?
Okay, so I live about 2 or 3 streets away from Lakota. It should be plenty of distance. There's various houses and blocks in between, so I shouldn't really be disturbed by them.
Yeah, it's about, I would suggest, maybe, 2 minutes walk, a minute and a half? Something. It's not far, is it, really?
No, but there's still quite a lot of fairly high buildings in between me and them, so the noise shouldn't be travelling that far, because our street is quite a long one.
Okay, so you're in a housing association flat. What made you decide back in May 2022 to write to the licensing committee to ask them to review the licence? What was behind that?
Well, for many years I've been working as a carer, so my job is to support those people in care or nursing homes, and that's not an easy job. And as well as doing that job to support myself, when I got home I was experiencing a lot of noise, a lot of people messing around outside my front door, a lot of people gathered outside my home, and on this one occasion I saw a massive group of people that had started an event that was in the Portland Square, and I had no idea that this event was even supposed to happen. And then as I walked back to my home, I saw such big crowds all the way around, and I later found out when I went to my parents' house that Lakota had done a block party. No one knew about it. There was no stewards on the road.
Somebody must have known, because there were hundreds of people around.
Yeah, thousands. And so it was advertised, I guess, online on social media or ticketing sites that I wouldn't necessarily visit. And the illegal rave held in Portland Square was never given permission either. You know, I didn't know about it myself because, you know, I came home from work at 8 o'clock and I was tired. And the scene that was appearing on my front doorstep and in the neighbourhood was such that I was actually frightened to be there. And I left the area. That would be very unusual for me to do that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, this is where at the beginning of July most years we've had the St Paul's Carnival. So it's the same kind of event, really, isn't it?
Yeah, apart from it didn't appear to be that well managed, and there was a huge group of young people that were all on Upper York Street and out on the Stokes Croft. There was such a huge crowd, and I could see that there were some people on the pavement that were filling up the laughing gas balloons and handing them out to the younger people.
Okay, so what happened when you went to, I mean, you send a little, fill in a form, send it to the council saying, I'm not sure that the licence for this nightclub is appropriate. A block party was what had been going on. That is to say, various venues in Stokes Croft and around that area where the Lakota is had all got together. But you mentioned this this unlicensed party that took place in Portland Square. Now, I experienced that too. I came home, so I don't live that far from you. And all day, the flat was vibrating with, I mean, I wouldn't even describe it as music. It was just a vile sound coming out. And we had to leave. I mean, we had to leave the flat. But this was unlicensed. So your hearing, as I understand it, was related to whether or not this block party, which Lakota was involved in, was anything to do with the Portland Square illegal rave. Now, I mean, let me just put my hands up, because I've been part of the rave movement, really, over the years, these free parties in the countryside, and the right to party. Now, if these are well stewarded and away from villages, then I would actually approve of illegal raves. But this wasn't. It was right in the middle of Portland Square, surrounded by probably about 300-400 immediately people trying to get to sleep.
And I did return early in the morning as well. So I saw Bristol Waste very early in the morning. There wasn't loads of them at the time, but there was lots and lots and lots of bags of rubbish. And there was someone from Bristol Waste clearing up a huge mess that had been made in that lovely Portland Square Park. And if anyone from Lakota or Block Party or anything like that tells you that they were involved in cleaning up their rave, they were not. It's council, you know, I pay my council tax, and it was Bristol Waste that were there early in the morning cleaning up all that waste in that square.
Okay, so they will say that that illegal rave had nothing to do with their legal licensed Block Party.
So there was quite a discussion about this, because I think at the licence hearing, I think they wanted to try and find out how many tickets were sold and whether Lakota believed they were at full capacity. It is quite difficult to prove whether Lakota was involved at all. It's possible that by creating such a big event and sharing it online, that an opportunist rave took place, and I have been in contact with the people that held that rave, and we've had numerous conversations by direct message, and they did say to me that look, you know, the police didn't care about it, and we got away with it. And I said, you know, for what it's worth, I'm glad you had the fun that you needed to. And they did tell me also that some of the press coverage afterwards had made it more difficult for them to do this type of thing again.
Good, because actually it made Portland Square unlivable that entire day and quite late into the evening too, I would say. So I'm, you know, trying to confess I do have a bit of skin in this game. I don't like the idea of doing these sorts of things in residential areas, particularly when the music is so... Well, I mean, if it was classical music, I wouldn't mind so much, but this was just vile. So I suppose it's all a matter of taste. But so how was your experience of the licensing hearing at the City Council?
So it was very formal, and I arrived at the council building. I was a little bit too early. I signed in and I was waiting. And then someone called Carl, who was one of the licensing officers I'd already been in touch with. He came and had a word with me for a moment to explain a little bit about the format, and also the Burgess family, Marty and Bentley, arrived. And then also there was about three of their bouncers that was with them. I have seen one or two of the bouncers in the area or at the gym since. I haven't had long conversations, but I'm familiar with
them. It's interesting the bouncers turn up for the hearing. What, did they play any role?
They did in some ways, actually, because I forgot to say that Lakota had a lawyer with them, and this lawyer did most of the talking. And a bit irritatingly, one of the council officers spent rather a lot of the time actually asking the lawyer questions about things, which, bear in mind, the lawyer is not a witness or even a local person.
Well, that's bizarre, because actually on their board, they Lakota do have a lawyer, don't they? One of the most famous lawyers in Bristol by the name of Marty Burgess. So wasn't she representing them?
There was a little bit of conversation from Marty, but the main amount of conversation from Lakota was handled by the lawyer.
Oh, I see. So they decided to employ a lawyer to do it. But overall, what was the result of the hearing?
So first of all, they said that we have to take into account that Miss Cooper is not a professional person and should be given the chance to put her point across about what has happened, and that it should be explored fully. So it was a very lengthy process. There was a break for coffee, and then we came back, and the whole process, the meeting was very long. I think there was a stop for sandwiches as well, and there was a couple of councillors on there asking different questions. One of the councillors was rolling his eyebrows and going tut 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 a lot. That made me think that he may actually be motivated to make some kind of decision or put forward some suggestions, but in the end I was told that they believe Lakota didn't cause or create this problem, and that the license would carry on as it was with some very minor changes. The only one I can really think of that was in my benefit was there was supposed to be signposting for a phone number on the entrance of Lakota. So it was a win in that it took a long time, but it was a loss in that nothing really was achieved.
Right, so if they said that they gave a commitment to make sure there was a phone number, that if people, local residents were frustrated with noise or something at night, that they could directly phone the Lakota. Did that ever happen?
No, there was a letter sent out quite soon after, because there's something that they sometimes do where they send letters to Duck Row Court, and they did send one to me about an event that's happening. That kind of folded. I was given, on there was an email for someone called Ewan, but I'd emailed them and then they never emailed me back. And I've managed to get hold of Marty on Twitter because she's on there all the time, but there was no phone number. I did bump.
I mean, was there any commitment by the nightclub or any of the individuals running it to engage with you as a local resident?
I said, what are you doing to engage in the local community? And they said, oh, yes, this, that and the other. And they gave a few names. And of course, because I didn't really know different organisations, I had to just take that as being true. One of the organisations they said they were involved with was Barbassa, which supports young people from BAME backgrounds. And I did actually talk to Barbassa on another occasion to ask them if they were involved in any DJing workshops with Lakota, and they said they had no involvement.
Hmm. So it all kind of came to nothing. That's what it sounds like to me, anyway. What about this character, Marley Bennett? I think he was a Labour councillor who... Was he chair of licensing?
Yeah, so there was also in the Lakota meeting, there was two of the licensing officers that were very active in
the conversation.
Right,
so they would have been kind of under him. So you've got Marley Bennett is almost like the president of the licensing.
He appears to be, yeah.
He would be, I imagine, chairing the meeting.
Mm, he was, yeah.
So...
But it was, if I can just interject,
Joe Banks, can you come in here? Because this Marley Bennett, chairing licensing now, is quite an interesting character. I mean, I remember for years, for many decades even, it was Ron Stone, the Labour councillor, that chaired licensing in quite a robust and tough way. And many of these nightclub venues were really afraid of having their licensing reviewed. And so they behaved themselves, should we say. They didn't upset local residents because they knew a licensing review was likely to mean a drop in profits, a drop in their opening hours, that sort of thing. So who is Marley, who's taken over from Ron Stone?
Well, so he's a young Labour councillor for Eastville in his 20s. But the first thing I was actually going to say was that this was a subcommittee, wasn't it? It wasn't the full licensing committee.
This one was a pretty big meeting. They had the lawyers, the council's lawyers were there.
Yeah,
and
but not the full... cross-party licensing committee, which is about, I don't know, 10 councillors, something like that.
To clarify, what licensing do is they will pick some of their members to do a specific review.
Mm.
So they won't be the whole committee.
Three councillors, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, to get back to Marley Bennett, I've taken an interest recently when I discovered that he's now employed by a planning and development consultancy called Turley, who do a lot of work in Bristol and nationally, working for big developers and helping them with through the planning process, basically, and doing PR and various other things.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't know, is he on any of the planning committees too?
He's on the Growth and Regeneration Scrutiny Committee.
Yeah, so what we've got here is an individual who's chairing a licensing committee who's actually very close to the developers, such as Lakota, who have their own plans in, and somebody that is kind of pushing for the corporate side against the citizens, essentially. And that's what a lot of these planning consultants are doing, is they're looking at ways that they can get the biggest possible highest density developments. Almost sounds like he's inappropriate to even be a councillor if he's in that role.
I mean, it's a very, very clear conflict of interest in terms of being on that Growth and Regeneration Scrutiny Commission, where you're supposed to be an independent councillor, working in the public interest, scrutinising what's going on with development in the city, what the council's role is in that. And if you're literally on the payroll of the people who are working for the developers, that's a very clear conflict of interest. I don't think that would necessarily bar him from being a councillor altogether, but it seems to me it's not like it's something where you could sit on that committee and recuse yourself, you know, when a clear conflict of interest comes up, because if you're going to do anything that threatens their interests at all in changing the planning environment in Bristol, they're not going to be paying you. You know, you're not going to be on their payroll.
Yeah, you're going to get the sack. Yeah, so there's definitely a conflict of interest. Is there any mechanism to identify councillors with conflicts of interest like Marley Bennett's? And they are not
supposed to, on the council website, to actually list conflicts of interest.
So it is listed. It's a pecuniary interest.
So it's listed on the website. But how about actually excluding them from decisions which are part of whatever their interest? I mean, what you were saying there was voluntarily recusing themselves. That means that they voluntarily step away from a decision. But what about if they don't, when there clearly is a conflict of interest?
Well, you... it's a big problem. I mean, the system is supposed to be that there's a monitoring officer at the council who is supposed to be on top of this stuff. and I actually, corresponded with him about this issue and was told that it's down to the council. If they feel there's any conflict of interest, they can step out of the meeting.
Well, it sounds like a complete failure in governance. If it's voluntary,
it is. And in the next stage, it was actually an ex-councillor who suggested to me that I could talk to the there's a values and ethics subcommittee of the council.
Might be having the discussion we're having now. Maybe.
Yes, you would hope so. I discovered that the chair of that subcommittee is a director of Business West, the very powerful and influential business lobbying group in Bristol.
It's so powerful, in fact, that it was one of the groups pushing for there to be a metro mayor, pushing, for example, the arena to be up at Filton, things like this. Yeah. I mean, they are very influential. And the thing is, whereas the council's always saying we're strapped for cash because their pet projects seem to suck in tens of millions of pounds of taxpayers' money, Business West seem to be, almost an unlimited credit card up their sleeve. But anyway, look, let's just talk a little bit back to Lakota. And Sophie Cooper's joining us too, who is one of the neighbours, not an immediate neighbour, but just literally a couple of minutes away from this nightclub off Stokes Croft in Bristol. And the actual location was the former Avon Coroner's Court, which was sold off in 1994. Now, in itself, this is a bit bizarre, this sell-off, because it would be interesting, I suppose, to try and track down some of those at the council who were involved in selling off the coroner's court, because it was a terrifically convenient place to have a coroner's court. When you have a suspicious death and you phone up the coroner and say, or the coroner themselves is notified or discovers that the death is suspicious, the coroner has an inquest into the death. They have a good old look at it. And there often you'll have bodies kept in the coroner's court. There was a mortuary in there too. And this was a very convenient place for it for all sorts of reasons. Very close to the bus station in central Bristol, all sorts of public transport and communications come very close by. And then in 94, it was moved out to a former school on the outskirts. Well, it's not on the outskirts of the city. It's well outside the city, at a place called Flax Boughton. To this old school, just round the back of the new coroner's court, is this place where the rumours are, although one can never be entirely sure, that this was the house that the famous Satanist Aleister Crowley would stay when he was in the Bristol area during the Second World War and just after the Second World War. It's a house called the Observatory, which is just round the back of the morgue at this ex-school. So the point really is not about Crowley and about Satanism, really. It's about the fact that there is only one bus or so every 2 hours out to Flax Boughton. It's a very difficult place to get to by public transport, to cycle or walk lots of hills, this sort of thing. And actually, once you're there, it's almost impossible to find it. The signposting is very difficult. So it seems to me that was an absolutely terrible move back in 1994 to sell off this very well-placed coroner's court right in the centre of the city to this place out in the back of beyond. And in fact, Paul Forrest, who I got to know, who was the coroner up until the mid-noughties, he was sacked by Bristol City Council for complaining about the location, saying that the facilities there weren't really up to the job. And as soon as he said that, he was immediately suspended by the City Council, who pay his wages. Mm. And that proved to everybody watching that Paul Forrest was not an independent coroner, because if he wanted to speak out about the way he was being treated, he was just simply jettisoned. So, and actually, an amazing service up at the St Mary Redcliffe memorial service to Paul Forrest was absolutely packed. The entire church, which is like a cathedral almost, was packed out by people who supported him when he finally died a few years ago. Very, very, very nice guy. Very, very decent and honest coroner. Anyway, so that's what's happened to the coroner's court. But this spot, the Lakota, is actually now was taken over at the time, wasn't it? So how, can you just maybe quiz me a little bit, Joe? That's Joe Banks, the local freelance journalist here in Bristol, about the Lakota nightclub and how it came into the hands of the Burgess family.
Well, yes. So when this was in 1994, and how do you know how it came about?
Well, yes, it's the siblings Marty and Bentley Burgess. They bought the Lakota in 94 with private venture capital funding. Now, no one really has managed to find out where that money came from, but you can see that if this place is vacant. And that would probably have been a kind of direct deal with the City Council. I'm not sure if it was tendered out, and we don't know how much they paid for it. But it was bought immediately from Bristol City Council with private venture capital funding. That was in 1994, and that was when the Lakota nightclub first opened. Their mother, Beverly Burgess, in 1999, set up a company in order to run it because it was proving impossible for the family to take on the liabilities of running this club. Beverly set up Beat Draw Limited to run Lakota, with the siblings' father, Vincent Burgess, as an equal shareholder with Beverly. So we're talking about Marty and Bentley Burgess running the club and the ownership of the shares being their parents, Beverly and Vincent Burgess.
Do you know anything about the name?
Well, the name Lakota, I think, is interesting because looking into this, as I did during the week, they were a tribe of Native Americans. Now, of course, you know, we have to look at the link between Bristol and the colonisation of North America. It's really quite an important link, particularly with the merchant venturers who were the families which financed the trip of John Cabot back in 14... It's going back away, this. 1497, that Sokol discovered Newfoundland and North America roughly the same time as Christopher Columbus discovered South America and the Caribbean. These families, once they realised what they found over there, they then formed this Royal Charter company called the Society of Merchant Venturers. Under the Royal Charter, this makes it, which it still exists today, under the Charter, it makes it very difficult to look into their affairs. But the reason I mention it is because of this connection with the colonisation of North America. I mean, there are various different figures of between 25 and 50 million Native Americans in North and South America massacred as part of that colonisation. So it was a particularly horrific discovery. But not only that, on top of that, these merchant venturers in Bristol began the slave trade. So they started to trade slaves from Africa, the triangular trade, which is quite well known, with none of the slaves actually coming, these black slaves, to Bristol, but they were sent over from usually the west coast of Africa over to the Caribbean and other parts of the Americas to work for the Society of Merchant Venturers' interests, the people who were now colonisers of that part of the world. They had this very bizarre, which I picked up in Canada, idea. When they arrived, they said, well, we're from a god given country. Our queen believes in God and Jesus Christ, and you don't. So we, as God's representatives, now own all the land, because the land is God's and we're God's representative here. You're heathens that don't believe in God, so we now own all the land. And of course, they rather quickly started selling that land for quite a lot of money to various colonists, including the merchants, of course. So the merchant venturers being here in Bristol, I think, is quite a significant factor in all of this. So who were the Lakota tribe when they were discovered? About around about 1600, etc., contact with them, and into 1700. So they were a tribe originally in Lake Superior area. They were a hunter-gatherer tribe, a sub-tribe of the Sioux. So the Sioux had various types of... and the Lakota were one, Native American sub-tribes. They moved about 400 miles, and they've now, most of the Lakota you'll find settled in North and South Dakota, which is a few hundred miles to the west. So they were kind of pushed westwards, as many Indians were. In the 1770s, the Sioux tribes, all of them, including the Lakota, were massive victims of the smallpox, which was deliberately spread by the colonizers, the merchant venturers, etc., and three quarters of them were killed. So that was a pretty horrific exercise in, for example, giving these Native Americans blankets which were infected with smallpox, which to which they had no immunity whatsoever. And so three quarters of them were wiped out just within a decade or so of the smallpox epidemics, which were deliberate. I mean, let's just be, this was biological warfare that the colonists were foisting on the Native Americans. One of the most famous of the Lakota tribe was this chap called Sitting Bull, who maybe many people have heard of. Another one was Crazy Horse. And interestingly, the tribe were one of the most favoured in the whole of the Americas by the colonists in 1823, a deal was done. They actually joined the U.S. Army and joined in the U.S. Army's intertribal wars. So they would be on the side of the colonists against fellow Native Americans, particularly the Pawnee Indians. There were many attacks and massacres by the U.S. Army and by the Lakota tribe against the Pawnees between 1843 and 1873, culminating in something called the Pawnee Massacre. There's over 150 Pawnees, including women and children, were massacred by the Lakota and by the U.S. Army together. Virtually destroyed a rival tribe. So, I mean, this was very much part of the whole sort of colonial divide-and-rule tactic going on here, saying, well, you're our favoured tribe, we'll work with you, and once we've wiped out other tribes, you can then take over their land, etc. So about 400 or 500 miles, they moved west after these U.S. Army wars. Obviously, that was then surpassed by the U.S. Civil War. And they were just south of the Canadian border. That's where the Dakotas are. So they were quite up to the north of the United States. So looking at the background of the Lakota tribe, the population actually doubled. When many of the other tribes had actually been massacred or even wiped out, between 1805 and 1881, in 1805, there were 8,000 Lakota. By 1881, there were 16,000. Now, this completely bucks the trend of most Native American tribes. Now, by the way, there are 170,000 Americans who identify as part of the Lakota tribe, although now only around about 2,000 of those, so that's what, about 1%, actually speak the Lakota language, which is still alive. Anyway, I thought it's interesting to look into this one specific tribe and their role in the colonisation of North America.
Is there any kind of direct link with the Burgesses or the... You don't know why it was why they went for that name?
No idea. Really no idea. I mean, it would seem to be an ill-advised name to have gone for, really. Of all of the Native American tribes, the Dakota were one of the most ruthless with the Native American
population.
Well,
that's kind of how their attitude is. They describe themselves as, you know, bold and boundaryless and, you know, pushing the limits of what can be done. And they're proud of that.
Anyway, so...
Yeah, well... So take us on with the story. How did it evolve during the 90s?
Okay, well, we left it with the Burgess family setting up this company, Beat Draw, in order to run their affairs, because I think they were having difficulty paying bills, etc., as private individuals running this. It doesn't look as if there was a specific company that had been set up for the venture capitalists to invest in the old Coroner's Court building, and now become a nightclub. But anyway, the beat drawer was set up in 1999. As I said, with the mother and father, Beverly and Vincent Burgess, as the main shareholders, and Bentley and Marty Burgess, the son and the daughter, both actually running it day to day. But when it came to August 2002, Beat Draw actually was forced to go into liquidation. So that wasn't all that long. That was just 3 years that they managed to keep that company going to run the Lakota. Winding up papers show that in 3 years, the Burgess Company they'd racked up a debt of around about £350,000 in unpaid bills to creditors. So they were taking equipment, maybe supposedly paying DJs, etc. Who knows? But a whole load of creditors that a nightclub has to pay in order to function were not being paid. But importantly, also, the £67,000 was owed to HM Customs and Excise and the Inland Revenue. So that's quite a lot of money. That's the best part of £100,000, 67K, to HM Customs and Excise unpaid tax. And also, on top of that, nearly £20,000 to Bristol City Council. They hadn't been paying their local taxes either, this company. So hence, they managed to keep it going until the authorities came and said, you can't carry on running this business if you're not going to be paying tax.
Was this reported at the time? Was this
not sure.
Public knowledge?
I think it would be public knowledge because the winding up order in administration from Companies House is public. I'm quite happy to share these documents. There's some very good documents behind what we're talking about here on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, or with anyone that would like to see them. These are public documents. So there wasn't, as I understand it, a big fuss at the time. The replacement of the company by a new company, which I'm coming to, it doesn't often come onto people's horizon anyway. In fact, the Lakota almost certainly can keep operating. They're just under a new name. One day it just flips.
A lot of people do. Construction businesses do this quite a lot. They'll go bankrupt and then they'll set up again.
Well, it's a very good way if you're having... it's actually fraud, and it's a technique of organised crime to have no intention of paying your debts, but simply to go into liquidation, go bankrupt, hold up your hands and say, well, sorry, we're not operating under that name anymore. So,
and just bear in mind that most people have not ever met Marty or Bentley, and I had the opportunity to see them in person, so we know what we look like, and don't see them around the area hardly at all. And I've seen Bentley near the club, and I said to him, I've seen a lot of fly posting all the way round on Junction 3 roundabout. He said he doesn't know where that is and that he's in a rush to get back to London. So the nightclub will actually look closed most of the time until you get into the evening, so that makes it more difficult.
Well, you mentioning fly postering. This was one of the first reasons back in the 1990s that the Lakota nightclub came onto the radar of anybody, which is the local city council prosecuting them through the courts for fly posting, illegal fly posting. So they don't really seem to be, maybe they're just not aware of what the law is.
Well, were there consequences to this liquidation?
Yes. Okay, so the liquidation took 2 years to chug through the enforcement process, and by 2004, Beverly Burgess was barred for 4 years from running or acting as a director in any company. Now, 4 years doesn't really sound like enough if the company that you've just folded deliberately, one would seem, but you haven't paid tax, but you've been making money, has only been going for 3 years. So If you're only being barred for 4 years, it doesn't seem like that's going to really stop you doing very much, especially if you can swap it around amongst different directors.
So that's about 1 year for every £100,000 that was not paid?
Yes, roughly, yeah. Maybe, yes. Yeah, so there was around about £370,000 unpaid by the previous Beat Draw Limited. So Beverly Burgess was barred for 4 years, as I said, from running or acting as a director in any business. She did not dispute her conduct had been unfit. So when that was put to her, your conduct has been unfit, she decided not to dispute that.
The club continued.
Yes, she had allowed Beatdraw to trade when there was no reasonable prospect of paying creditors' claims. She also, as the HMRC judgment winding up order suggests, she also caused or allowed the company to fail to submit VAT returns. Neither Vincent nor Bentley Burgess were subject to the order. So what you've got here is the one person being singled out, that is Beverly Burgess, who was supposed to be in charge of the finances. She's told you can't serve as a director for 4 years, but the others can continue to serve. And it seems there was no plan at all to pay VAT. Maybe there was no understanding of VAT on the board of the business.
I mean, it's probably worth also saying that, I mean, Lakota was a very popular club.
It has been one of the most popular.
It had by then established itself as sort of a key part of Bristol's nightlife. Despite these, you know, financial irregularities or crimes, it kept going. It wasn't wound up. I mean,
well, it was. Yeah, it was wound up. Beatdraw, but actually, no. Beatdraw. Gone into administration. Well, what's going on is the individuals are continuing to run the club, but using different companies as a kind of front to run it financially. So Beatdraw continued to operate. So it had been put into an administration, but it continued to operate throughout the noughties. But it was finally wound up in 2012. In 2013, Teton Events was formed, the new company, with the following shareholders. By this time, of course, you've got Beverly Burgess is now allowed to be a director again. Her period of being banned has ended a long time before that. So, it was wound up in 20. Beatdraw was wound up in 2012. In 2013, Teton Events was formed with the following shareholders: Vincent Burgess, Beverly Burgess, Bentley Burgess, and Martino Burgess. Also, Alonzo Burgess, Brent Taylor, and Cassara Burgess. So Burgess is very much in the ascendant in this new business, which is after Beatdraw was wound up, Teton Events is now running the show. By January 2017, okay, that's 2013, Teton Events took over. The premises license holder for the Lakota was Teton Events Limited, and designated premises supervisor was Bentley Burgess. So Bentley's very much carried on, but also it seems to have taken them 4 years to actually swap the official holder of the license over from the previous business to this business that's now running it. I mean, they just do not really seem to be all that interested in making sure that they're complying with the law, because obviously it looks as if anyway. I mean, we can conjecture quite fairly that a company that didn't exist was actually in charge of the license for several years.
And so, with Teton Events, is that still the entity that's running the club?
Okay, well, 10 years after, which is where we are now, after the company was set up, the new company, Teton Events, 6 years, we're 10 years on from that now, in 2023 speaking, 6 years after it was formed, a petition to wind up Teton Events was presented on 7th of February 2019 by, guess who? The same commissioners for HM Revenue and Customs, having a look at this new company again for not paying their taxes. We're not sure if it was VAT again that they simply failed to pay. That is not clear. But it's extraordinary, really, that the same thing happened to this new company as happened to Beatdraw. Now Teton is being told you've got to wind up because you haven't been paying your tax, only 6 years after it was formed.
If I can just jump in there, the licensing department advised me that the 24/7 license for Lakota was last approved again in 2012. So just a year before that, the license was approved again for this very open-ended license.
You say 2012 or 2022?
2012 was when the license was approved.
2012 doesn't really mean anything. Hang on. 2012...
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about 2012?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that same license, 24/7, to serve alcohol and provide entertainment, has continued another 11 years. So despite...
How often does the license have to get renewed?
I think the license reviews are kind of advisory, and so they might be every 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Or depending on if someone requests a review.
Mm. And yes, but Lakota is still operating.
Yeah, through all this, and the two interventions by the tax officials to shut it down, it's still been going. In March 2020, the same shareholders and directors in Teton Events set up a new company called Swift River LLP, but the first black merchant venturer, going back to the merchant venturers again, Marty Burgess, she was the lawyer who's one of the original part of the family that bought the old coroner's court. It now also joins the board of directors. So she's a lawyer and does a lot of work for the city council, actually, for example, in recommending how the council should deal with inquiries about special educational needs. So giving them legal advice about the minimum that the council has to provide, because they are apparently strapped for cash and they don't like spending money on people with special needs. Marty Burgess's company is working for the council doing that. So obviously very close to the council as a lawyer.
She works for a big legal firm, isn't it?
Yes. So she's now joined the board of directors too, presumably to give legal advice. And now I would also suggest that since there's a lot of corporate lawyers in the merchant venturers, which she's part of, that she's really there to go to the merchant venturers meetings, to have a chit-chat over lunch about, oh, we've got a bit of a problem, HMRC are closing us down again, what do you advise, from these top corporate lawyers as part of the Society of Merchant Venturers, this almost unscrutinisable organisation which is formed under a royal charter, which we can't find out their accounts or anything about, really. But anyway, so they're the slave traders. And it was quite extraordinary that Marty was the first black person to join the merchant venturers, and a lot of people of West Indian origin, particularly in Bristol, will rather raise their eyebrows that any black person would want to join an organisation so utterly covered with the blood of the slave trade, and particularly with the colonisation of North America and the hideous genocide that took place there. Why would a black person want to join that? So there were questions raised at the time about Marty joining. So, yes, they carried on operating again. So we've got a new company now. This is Swift River LLP, a March 2020 setup. Marty Burgess on the board of directors, the two, along with the others that we just mentioned, to bring some expertise from the corporate lawyers at the merchant venturers, probably, to the board around the latest legal techniques as to what they could do to get away with whatever the problem was at the time. And she appears to have done that because new tactics are being employed. After Marty's joined, two other companies have also been set up in parallel to run the Lakota in the meantime. They are called Iktomi, I-K-T-O-M-I, and Lakota Limited. So there's
Iktomi
now...
Iktomi is the licence holder that was on the name of the licence review.
Right, so we've now got three companies apparently running Lakota. I'm not sure quite who all the directors of all of them are, but this seems to be the advice that Marty Burgess has given them, is now if we set up three different companies at the same time, we may be able to shuffle the liability and blame between these different companies and
sometimes give them the directors roles. Appeared to be very young people that were involved with promoting the club on social media. So not exactly responsible.
Well, it may be a way to bring people in to the management of the club from the local area to sort of spread the burden of responsibility somewhat.
And were there any consequences for the non-payment of the taxes by Teton Events, the earlier company?
That's right. This is Lakota Management Company Mark II that was wound up in 2019. No, well, for 3 years, of course, the wheels of justice turned very slowly. Nothing happened. But then in 2022, Bentley Burgess was removed as demanded by the Insolvency Service, and rather than an individual, Lakota Limited was then appointed as a director. So rather than individuals who have been banned, what's happening now is that companies are being appointed around the board table. Now, I'm not quite sure how that works. I guess you've got a representative of the company sitting around the board helping to make the decisions.
A little bit like the situation that I arrived at, where there was Bentley and Marty and then another person doing the talking for them.
Well, no, I think they're employing a lawyer there,
yeah,
specifically from London, a barrister, a top barrister, to deal with this.
But in a way, they're sitting around a table with a company doing the work for them rather than themselves.
It is bizarre when you see a company where actually there is only one human being on the board, and the rest of the people around the board are just other companies. And that could be anybody from that company sitting and making a decision, or it could simply be a letter sent by a board of a different company saying what they want to happen. And you may have a whole board meeting with really only one human being sitting around a table with lots of bits of paper trying to make a decision. But obviously that makes it a lot easier to make that decision if you've only got bits of paper or other companies sitting around with you. So
we've got Bentley Burgess removed.
Yeah. Okay. So there were consequences. There were consequences. So in 2022, Bentley Burgess is removed and demanded by the insolvency service, and rather than an individual, Lakota Limited appointed as director. So this, it seems that this is a technique that's now being employed to have businesses sitting around the board table running Lakota rather than individuals. Bentley Sean Burgess was banned from acting as a director for 3 years from the 1st of August 2022.
Shortly after the licence review then.
Yeah. Beverly and Vincent Burgess were also banned for 3 years from the 15th of March 2021. So effectively now we're starting to run out of Burgesses that are able to serve on the board of anything. And what we're seeing instead is companies turning up and obviously Marty too as board members.
I didn't realise that Bentley had been banned a few months after the licensing review. That's interesting to know.
Yeah. But, of course, again, it's only 3 years. I mean, these companies have been going for much longer than the period
they're very
they've
resilient.
Been banned for.
So, and there's no other sanction. There's no punishment. It's just a ban, that's it.
It seems to be, yes. So banning them from being a director seems to be the only consequence.
And why... I mean, I hadn't heard anything about this. I don't think it's public knowledge. Why do you think that is?
Well, we're talking about approaching £500,000 worth of tax evasion, fraud and running up debts that they seem to have no intention of ever paying. The organised crime technique of running up bad debts, then deliberately collapsing companies every 6 or 7 years in the knowledge that by that time somebody else in the family who was banned from serving is no longer banned from serving and can take a role around the new board table.
Has this been covered in the local media?
Not much, no, hardly any, really. And one of the reasons for that is possibly because one of the main outlets in Bristol that looks at the nightlife is this company Bristol 24/7, which Marty Burgess is a shareholder in and also a director of. So, of course, if she sees a story coming her way about how this nightclub has been behaving, she may decide that the editor should be removed rather than the story published.
It's worth reflecting again on how embedded Marty Burgess is in the whole establishment
to be fair, Joe, other directors of the company might challenge her on that and say, well, actually, I think this is an important story and maybe you should recuse yourself from the board because you have a vested interest in this story. But often that sort of thing doesn't happen, particularly in the media. In fact, one of the things I've seen over the years with the merchant venturers is that they always want to place themselves on the board, for example, of the old Evening Post, the Bristol Post, which used to be run by Northcliffe, now by Reach PLC, in order precisely to keep an eye on any stories that might be coming out critical of the merchant venturers.
Well, my first encounter of coming across Marty Burgess actually really was, and I emailed her, didn't get a response, but this was around when I was writing an article for the Bristol Cable about the Western Harbour development, which is this... what the mayor would like to be an enormous development going on at Cumberland Basin down the western side of the harbour.
Yeah, this is very valuable land because many of the properties will be looking straight down the Avon Gorge to the iconic Clifton Suspension Bridge right next door.
Yeah. And they've been trying to get this going for basically since Marvin Rees first came into office. And he set up, after really annoying the local people, basically, by, first of all, not telling them about any of these plans and then hearing about it because it was in a brochure he was taking around to foreign investors in China. That was the first time the local people heard there might be this enormous development on their doorstep. So it was a way of trying to massage the process and move it on. The council and Marvin Rees set up something called the Western Harbour Advisory Group, which was going to be this group of stakeholders and local representatives who would offer some sort of accountability and democratic control over this evolving development. And this was chaired by John Savage, a former master of the Merchant Venturers, the guy who set up Business West, them again.
Yeah, chairman of Business West for a long time.
And Marty Burgess was on that advisory group as well. And it was looking through the minutes of that, of their meetings, and seeing that half the people on that advisory group just didn't attend any of the meetings. One of them was Marty Burgess. I think she'd attended about two out of the 14 or so meetings they'd had. And I just thought, this is really weird. You know, why would you have people on this board for this really significant development, one of the most significant developments in the next decade or so in Bristol?
Well, it's great that you brought them up, because I was on the Bristol Cultural Development Partnership myself for about 8 years in the noughties. I was a representative of the voluntary sector in Bristol. So that was a fascinating... John Savage was in charge of that. He was chairing it constantly. It was also interesting to look at these partnerships and how they're funded. So it was one-third Arts Council funded, one-third Bristol City Council, and one-third Business West funded. And it's nice to see the business community chipping in. But the thing is, the entire operation was line managed by Business West. Mm. So really, this is a way of the business community deciding what they think the cultural priorities are for Bristol, and making the lion's share be paid for out of the public purse.
Mm.
I've got another one on that, actually, because the Carriage Works, I know you might have thought, oh, I don't like the new development, but they made a cultural plan a few years ago, and they
Carriage Works, is just up Stokes Croft from where the Lakota is, isn't it? It's been a long-term eyesore, which has most recently been developed after Mayor George Ferguson threatened to compulsorily purchased the building. Finally, the owners decided to sell it to what was a reasonably sympathetic developer. Anyway.
Yeah, so the developer had commissioned an arts and cultural plan for the building, and it involved some really nice ideas about acoustic events and events that were family-friendly, events that finished at 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, there was a lot of really great stuff on there. But there's recently been a licence application put in to sell alcohol there till, say, 2 or 3 in the morning, and amplified speakers and live music. So that sounds to me very similar to what we already have a lot of. And it goes completely against what the developer themselves commissioned as a cultural plan, which was something acoustic, something not alcohol-based, something that wouldn't be going on later in the night. And then the last point is, when I saw the write-up of that development in Bristol 24/7, it was an article, but it looked like an advertisement, because it was a business. Actually, I have to say, the business that's going in looked quite nice, and it's got another bar that actually does look quite nice in that market, but it really didn't go into any detail of what the cultural plan, which was commissioned by the developer, and there was a proper plan in place, and they consulted people about what would add value and what appropriate stakeholders would be.
This brings up this whole, it's really what brought about your licence review about Lakota at Bristol City Council, which is this idea that if you've got noise right late on into the night in a residential area, it's simply not appropriate, because you're either going to have, you know, to go through the sort of legal processes, or you're going to have to flee the area, as you had to do, Sophie, or else you're going to have confrontations in the street between local residents and, you know, trying to turn off the power and trying to unplug speakers and all this kind of... We're basically going down the road of violent confrontation between local residents and the bouncers of a nightclub.
Well, when I moved into my flat in social housing, I had a sports coaching business and I had a ghetto blaster that I used to use in sports coaching sessions. And there was one day, maybe 2012, when I was listening to my Top of the Pops on my speaker and there was a knock at the door and it was a police officer. They said, "Someone's complained about you playing your music. Could you please turn it off?" And I was a bit embarrassed. I thought, okay, it's fine, I'll turn it off. But those days seem to be long away. And I'm surprised with the volume that they reach in that club. It's not a safe volume for anyone to be nearby. It's very excessive. That really the police should be turning up and seizing equipment if it's going to be causing that much of a nuisance until 5 a.m. in the morning.
Well, they certainly would be doing that if this was a rave taking place out in the country somewhere. That's exactly what the police do, if so long as the numbers are not in there, you know, sort of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people at a rave, which makes it difficult for the police to do that. But it seems not in a residential area in the city, which is utterly perverse, really. I mean, you know, this is the sort of place where people need to sleep. They need to be getting up in the morning, this sort of thing. And that, it seems, is subservient to this need to make profit by people like the Lakota.
And just bear in mind that the people that live in this area, a lot of them carry out very essential jobs, such as a carer, not being paid a huge amount, people that might be doing the delivery for you and dropping it off your Tesco's,
lot of key workers in social housing, etc., which is around that area. But of course, we've also got students who don't apparently mind too much. Now, you also mentioned that you'd have to do something to stop the noise coming through your windows, Sophie.
Yes.
Because the licensing committee hadn't really listened and your ongoing problem wasn't being addressed.
Yep, and I'd contacted neighbourhood enforcement and I'd gone through all the processes of all the people that were supposed to be responsible, and what I did in the end is to pay over £2,500 out of my own money. The landlord wouldn't pay it, the council or Lakota. I actually asked the council if they'd pay £100 towards it and they said no. So I paid £2,500 to have extra glazing in my flat, which has made a huge difference regarding people walking past at night. But the thudding of the bass is at such a volume now that I need to now work out how to stop it coming through the walls and the
bass,
floor.
I'm afraid the bass manages to make it through the windows.
I think it goes through the sewers, through the floor, through the windows.
Yeah.
The house is basically shuddering, isn't it, with the...
Yes, your flat can be vibrating. That's certainly what I experienced in the illegal Portland Square rave. The whole flat was vibrating. I mean, the ceilings, the floors. So what about, I mean, have you felt that the best thing to do is just to move?
So I've been making a backup plan, a little bit like Lakota, for quite a while, and I've been exploring Cardiff and Wales because I already had some friends and family there. And interestingly enough, in Cardiff, St Mary's Street is the main stretch with all the drinking and the clubs and the nightlife. And what really works well in Cardiff is they're not trying to put residents in the same area as this huge, great, big nightclub, night economy stretch. And there's such a buzz there. I mean, it is really loud there, but it's got its own... It's got this whole massive long street with all the bars and all the clubs. It's going to be noisy all night. 5 a.m. in the morning, the waste companies are going to start cleaning it all up. And it's just marvellous, really, because all of that noise and all of that night economy, it's got that huge, great long stretch to exist on. Mm. And, I mean, I've had to remind myself that people do need to go out and they need to have a night out and they need to have fun.
Mm.
But it just doesn't seem to work. More and more housing right next to it.
But that is going to be an increasing problem because it is the stated aim of the city authorities is to have more and more people living in the centre of the city. That densify the centre of the city because you're new transport. But
you seem to be piling in student flats with existing housing association flats with nightclubs like the Lakota. Now, the other thing, Joe, is that the nighttime economy, which is the sort of three-letter acronym, the NTE, seem to be quite well organised in Bristol. They have they also have a hand-picked by the mayor nighttime economy advisor.
Is that Carly?
By the name of Carly Heath.
Yeah, who I've... contacted various times and has not got back to me, and appears to be someone that maybe very interested in actually going to nightclubs as a customer, that's fine. I mean, I've done it occasionally myself, but I don't feel that she's particularly interested in the residents or the disabled people that live nearby or just the everyday person.
Hang on, because Epigram, which is the Bristol University student magazine, says that Marty Burgess, the co-chair of the Bristol Night Panel...
Oh, she's there as well.
Yeah. And the owner of Lakota, although I'm not sure she's entirely the owner, she's certainly a director, said that it was clear from both her application and interview that Carly has a deep understanding of Bristol's nighttime economy, but also how it crosses over into the wider culture sector. So would you agree with that comment by Marty Burgess about Carly, saying that she has a...
I would agree that she's marvellous at the same time as not being interested at all and seems to have avoided the area and avoided the topic of the local noise pollution and the possible crimes.
Let's just be absolutely clear here. Carly, sorry, what's her second name?
Heath. Carly Heath.
Carly Heath is a lobbyist for nightclubs and she's not interested in what local people think. The idea is that local people make complaints and that's bad for... nightclubs. Anyway, getting back to Lakota, still more to go through here. So just to make it clear, the original director of Bristol 24/7, this is the paper which Marty Burgess is now a director of and a shareholder in. Bentley Burgess was one of the original directors of Bristol 24/7 when it set up, and he resigned in July 2022. I suppose when he was told he could no longer be a director, which is what happened in 2022. But Marty Burgess is still a director at Bristol 24/7.
And you were talking about the students, that there are more and more student flats are being built around there.
Well, there are, yes. In fact, there is a plan for the nightclub itself to be demolished, most of it anyway, and part of the coroner's court still there. I don't know if they've still got the morgue. I'm not sure. They showed me round it years ago. Mm. There was the morgue there around about 2008. But anyway, there is, I think, a pretty awful record of bad things going on. I mean, if you look through, I mean, this is just the ones that have hit the headlines in Bristol. I mean, when one goes to a nightclub, you might want to look at TripAdvisor. One of the, well, the first one on there is avoid drug-fueled, rude staff and violent security. So that's what TripAdvisor is telling you if you wanted to go there. Although there are some good ones too. That was the first one on the list there. In April 2011, let's just go through a sort of timeline of some of the problems. A 16-year-old Joe Simons from Bath died after buying ecstasy, according to his friend, inside the club. So you have bouncers searching people as they go in often, and yet this is a known technique by organised crime, is that they get in, they are inside the club, maybe with agreement, maybe being paid. You know, there may be some financial arrangement there. So then paying some of the money that they're making from selling drugs to the club owners. So 16-year-old Joe Simons from Bath died after buying ecstasy, according to his friend who was with him inside Lakota. On to April 2018. I mean, this is by no means complete, but this is just a cursory look through some of the headlines. Under an underage 15-year-old called Jackson Gibbons from Pontypool in Wales shouldn't have been allowed into the Lakota. He went in there and later that night he died after taking three so-called ecstasy pills. Well, quite what those pills were, where he got them from, isn't really known. But that's the second death of someone going to Lakota to supposedly enjoy themselves. In October 2019, a man was punched in the face, unprovoked. His head was smashed into the floor and he was taken to hospital with a bleed on the brain. That's October 2019. And these violent assaults seem to be happening more regularly recently.
Bear in mind that the police are avoiding the place as well, because whenever I walk past, there don't seem to be any police. Well, they're making a lot of noise.
Let's be fair, there's not a lot of police around in Stokes Croft, which is one of the obvious places they should be on, say, a Friday or on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
In February 2022, two men were assaulted in Lakota, one punched in the face, who had his teeth knocked out, and another one was headbutted. Both needed hospital treatment. In June 2022, a woman was raped inside Lakota, and the police released a CCTV image of the suspect. There was certainly no suggestion that she was making it up at all. And in May 2022, just last year, Lakota was the subject of the Bristol City Council Licensing Committee hearing, which is what we were instigated by you, Sophie, after the illegal rave in St Paul's. You were saying that something about open drug dealing outside Lakota. Do you believe that?
I do believe that. I absolutely saw people with the size of fire extinguishers. That's how I described it. Laughing gas. I mean, it's very very popular, and this was one of the first times I really saw it.
Laughing gas canisters are really about maybe 2 or 3 inches long, little silver canisters.
Yeah, but we're talking about something the size of a fire extinguisher, a small fire extinguisher.
So we're talking about maybe
no bigger than that,
a foot long.
I'd say it looked like about that big.
Okay,
so and we see them a lot now.
That's about 60 centimetres long in new money.
Yeah. So we see them a lot now, but this was one of the first times I saw it. Was this? You know, they look like a fire extinguisher type thing, and then it's just like laughing gas on tap. So it's just constantly filling up the balloons, and then I guess people are buying them for £1 or £2.
And this was this mentioned at the hearing where their license was renewed?
It was, and also part of the licensing agreement is that the licensee must not cause harm to young people. One of the things that Lakota really really wanted to champion was the fact that there was, oh, I think they said there was 20 bouncers in the club. The thing is, I wasn't inside the club. I walked past. The council asked me how many bouncers were on the door. Just bear in mind, it was a huge crowd. It was quite a stressful moment for me. People asked me if I took photos. Honestly, at the time, I just thought, I need to get out of here. If I took a photo, my belief on that occasion was that I could have ended up being hurt, and that the best situation for me to get myself out of that was to actually get away.
Yeah, so much of what you're saying seems to be the result of a lack of police presence anywhere.
Completely. And when there was the rave, this illegal rave, I phoned the police, and I said that they said that they're aware of it and they're dealing with it. But I never saw any police there, and the people that organised it themselves had said that the police did not care.
Well, I can tell you that there were so many people in Portland Square that day, and it was really literally started about 11 a.m, maybe 10 a.m, and they were there all day and switched. I think they switched it off around about 11 p.m. There were so many people in there; it really would have been impossible for the police to do anything, because if the police had turned up to try and even discuss the matter with the people and ask them when they were going to stop, etc., there may well have been, you know, serious problems for those police. So just trying to run through the timeline, we're not quite finished yet. There's another one as well. So Marley Bennett is dismissing these claims about drug dealing openly outside the club that you made, and they're saying, oh, there's no photographs, so maybe they just don't believe you. You know, this is the zero trust agenda, isn't it? You know, well, we're in charge, and anything that anybody says, unless you've got hard evidence for it, we don't trust you at all. So again, this is dissuading people like you from coming.
I know,
forward.
And I actually felt quite, you know, sick going to the meeting, because it was quite a big deal. And going to that meeting, part of me said to myself, I might be able to stop someone from dying by actually raising these concerns, and that was the thing that drove me. Mm.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? You're sitting there, and you've got a whole load of nightclub people from the Lakota on one side, plus their barrister, plus their merchant venturer solicitor director, Marty Burgess. And then you've got the council running it. This guy, who's part of a planning consultancy, is the chair of the councillors group. And you've got some council officers. Did you really feel anyone was there speaking to you or for you or listening to you?
So we both got our chance to speak, but I would say what I was able to say was pretty limited. And I did at first feel quite impressed with one of the councillors. It wasn't Marley Bennett, it was another one who was asking a lot of questions. But after a while, could be, yes. It could be. After a while, the questions weren't leading anywhere. You know, I've been to quite a lot of job interviews, and I've got some interview experience myself. The questions seemed to be not setting anything up. I just would have thought maybe we were asking a lot of questions, but it didn't seem to be really going anywhere. There was a lot of disapproving faces and, oh gosh, they're at it again. But then it just sort of folded, you know.
Well, it sounds like a failure of governance. What did you wanted to chip in, John?
Well, I just wanted to ask whether you felt there was a serious discussion between the councillors that were there.
They did seem to take it seriously on that occasion that the meeting had gone on quite a long time. They asked questions about how many tickets were sold. They asked questions about whether you could get a car through that Upper York Street, to which the lawyer that wasn't there, who didn't see it, said you could get a car through that street. So there was asked questions about whether CCTV was available.
What would you say about getting a car through?
You couldn't. It was just rammed, and there was a lot of people. And I remember all the e-scooters were all on the floor as well. You were only really able to walk through.
So we haven't quite come to the end of the... Because in October 2022, Fat Boy Slim Rave, I'm not sure if he was there himself, I imagine he was. They obviously got some connections. Had to be closed down by the police after revellers had been climbing over the walls, wannabe revellers, to an already packed outdoor rave, which the owners decided to allow to carry on despite overcrowding way outside their licence. So what you've got is a rave going on. They've stopped people coming into the gate because they're already overcrowded, and then people start going over the wall and climbing in. But they still allow it to carry on, Joe.
Is that right? Yeah.
The police have to be... The police did get involved this time and ordered them to shut the event down, yeah.
I thought originally it started that the event was unloaded somewhere, that it didn't have permission, and then they moved it to Lakota got out of control.
That was actually around that Western Harbour area, near Cumberland Basin. It was under the flyover there, I think. And the police turned up and said it couldn't be there. So
and I do wonder if I'd got that, you know, the picture of proof, whether it would have made any difference. Because, of course, you could have obtained CCTV. Would it have made a difference if I got the picture of proof? I think that it probably wouldn't have.
What they're doing is they're giving you a very strong cross-examination, but they're not giving the Lakota anything like that sort of cross-examination. So this is fascinating, actually, to hear that there's an illegal event going on, but actually the Lakota put up their hands and say, look, guys, just come into our yard. You can do it there. And does that make it legal? No, it doesn't make it legal, particularly because the place is overcrowded and people are climbing over the walls. At least the police seem to have acted in that situation, amazingly, but largely because public order, there was a massive public order question about all these maybe hundreds of people who were coming to an event and then trying to get in over the walls. So one of the most interesting characters in all of this is this woman, Marty Burgess. She links the Merchant Venturers, the Burgess family, the Lakota nightclub, and, of course, the nighttime lobby, effectively, the Bristol's rather vociferous nighttime community lobby of the nightclubs to get their way. So she is co-chair, it's just to underline, of Bristol City Council's board, Bristol at Night. That's the little symbol at you get in your emails, but Bristol at Night. Sits on the Bristol Cultural Development Partnership, as I mentioned. She's also on the board of the Bristol Music Trust and on Bristol City Council's Economy Board.
That's the one part of the One City setup, isn't it?
Right. Well, this is worth mentioning, isn't it? The One City setup replaces the old committees that with councillors on. So these are policy committees. They're now just people who are being appointed by the mayor.
Mm.
In fact, there's no councillors on these committees at all, but they are now in charge of policies, personal friends of the mayor, people he has appointed and who echo his values.
It's the big institutions, isn't it? The university was very present on it.
Yeah, well,
there's a
smattering of individuals like Marty Burgess, for example, but these are people who don't represent in any way voters. So this is the point. This is people who are part of effectively a clique of which is now running Bristol, rather like the Merchant Venturers clique, which is now kind of those ideas have now, it seems to me, crept into City Hall, and the councillors are being shut out from the democratic process. So the people we elect don't get involved in making these policies as part of this One City plan, which seems to me seems guaranteed to divide the city rather than to bring it together, where you've got a kind of city clique deciding things with the voters shut out of
and
the process.
It's worth saying that she's been a very vocal supporter of the mayor Marvin Rees.
I was told by Stephen Williams, former MP, that he'd heard from Marvin that he wanted to be the first black merchant venturer. Marvin Rees, the current mayor. and that obviously that hasn't happened because Marty Burgess has pipped him at the post.
Mm.
But it does seem to me peculiar, and particularly chatting to in St Paul's to the West Indian community, that any black person, as I said before, would want to join this slave trading organisation.
Mm. Well, it's great. It's great PR for the Venturers.
It is, yeah. They're just providing public relations for them, aren't they, really?
And Marvin Rees also made her an international ambassador. There were three.
What, does Bristol have international ambassadors?
I've no idea what that means.
But, I suppose we're attaching all these good qualities to someone that it makes it more difficult to challenge some of the genuine safety concerns and the lack of professionalism in the way that it's run. So, and the discrimination against people that have not got a lot because of, you know, people facing lots of challenges to report or get any help.
Bristol City Council doesn't need international ambassadors. What it needs is it needs its streetlights to work and it needs its bins to be emptied.
Mm.
These, are, it seems to me, are not priorities for this current administration. As it's really echoing the business community who see this as an exercise which doesn't, you know, they spend as little money as they want on the poor people. But they believe that by somehow helping business, including nightclubs, and by turnover, that is good for the city. Well, of course, it isn't in the cases that we've been hearing.
One of someone that I know from Duckrow Court said that they are quite deaf now, and they didn't say there was a link between it, but they've obviously lived for many years with. And it's there's other people, a number of people, you know, the Earplugs Club, that people who live in St Paul's who will discuss what the best earplugs are, and people are having to permanently wear earplugs at night.
Well, I mean, all this is stoking up confrontation to come. On the City Centre Resilience Board, Marty Burgess is also there, and also on the Western Harbour Advisory Group you were mentioning earlier, Joe. This was actually campaigned
never
against.
Never attended any of the meetings.
It's interesting, isn't it? But campaigned against by George Ferguson, the campaigning architect, the previous mayor. But as soon as he's out of the way, suddenly this is slated for an enormous development around the harbour area. On her LinkedIn page, Marty Burgess says about Lakota, "I have very limited involvement in the day-to-day running, although I help set strategy and work with the promotions and marketing team at the nightclub." So that's Marty Burgess for you. Do you want to just say, to wind up this look at the nightclub, including these various problems, if there's anything that you could suggest that the nightclub could simply do which would make things better for local people around Lakota?
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly very successful and they provide an outlet to young people. I was disappointed to hear some young people recently telling me that the speaker was so loud that the ceiling even started to fall through. So I think you have to bear in mind that that is concerning. I'm very protective of the area that I live in, and I don't like the idea of young people being harmed or injured. I'm concerned about my own hearing, the safety of my own hearing, and loss of sleep is difficult for me because it means it's like going to work is very difficult.
Well, it's actually a form of torture, sleep deprivation. Now, we're in between, in 2023, we're in between May and July, which means we've just had the block party, and coming up is the carnival. So can you just say something about this year's block party, which is, Lakota is officially part of that, which is, it's an American term. We don't really have blocks here in Britain, but the Americans do. And the idea is that various venues on your block, if you're in New York or something, will open in a kind of concerted, synchronised way with a specific load of marketing that goes out right across the city. So this block party, how did it go for you, Sophie?
So this year I made plans in advance to be somewhere else. So it's getting to the point where I'm making plans nearly every weekend. One of the plan might be to go to the cinema at 11 o'clock at night so that I can come home at 1:30 so that I don't have to put up with it the whole night. I've got quite a lot of people that I'll go and stay with on a Saturday night. And obviously there's costs involved with travelling, although I'm very grateful to have numerous relatives that like to see me. I've also found this was, you know, I have had some counselling around anger because I've been quite angry about what's happened and I've needed to manage that. So I've spent about £500 on counselling. And then I found out that the carnival wanted to put a speaker outside my front door.
Okay,
as well.
So this is the St Paul's Carnival, which has been off for a few years, but it's back on, I think it's the 1st of July 2023.
Yeah, so I did speak to the carnival and they were saying that it's always been like this, and it, you know, and so I put in an objection because it's right next to my house and I feel like there's a loss of trust in terms of volume.
I mean, surely this is bound to happen. It happens in Notting Hill too.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, it will get switched off at 10 p.m.
Well, yeah, you're right. And it should be. And, you know, I went to the council meeting and they said basically that it's all just going to carry on as usual. I wouldn't be sensitised to this if I hadn't put up with what feels like the carnival, you know, three or four nights a week and just the abuse of my sense of peace and space and quiet. I feel like I've been subjected to a lot of antisocial noise, and I would be much more supportive of carnival-type activity if it did happen once a year rather than every week.
Well, so we've heard since the place was bought from Bristol City Council, or I imagine it may have been Avon Council in 1994, the ex-coroner's court, the Lakota Nightclub, has been through a whole litany of problems with legal problems, with having directors dismissed, non-payment of taxes, which they actually seem to have a habitual problem with that, and also, of course, antisocial behaviour towards neighbours. So we have, I mean, they must be thinking, Joe, well, at some point, maybe our licence will be revoked. And so it's interesting to see that in 2020, there was a planning application submitted so that the nightclub might be demolished and a whole load of flats built instead.
Yeah, which they got permission, and I think it was April 2020, something like that. It was recommended for approval by the council officers, and then the councillors voted to approve it unanimously, I think.
So I wonder whether this is just plan B, if the nightclub has to wind up for whatever reason, whether it's due to legal censure of directors, of shareholders, or by the police intervening because of chaotic events taking place there outside the licence. That they might just say, well, let's just turn our back on that and cash in our chips. To be fair, down Upper York Street, which is where Lakota is, there's already some enormous new student developments, and that seems to be flavour of the month here in Bristol. They could well make a lot of money on the conversion of the old coroner's court, which they may not have been able to do in the 1990s.
Yeah. I mean, there's a very pro-developer environment, and there are lots of huge amount of developers circling Bristol who see sites like that.
Yeah, so why haven't they just cashed in their chips, and why haven't they demolished it? Why isn't that building already taking place?
Happened.
I think they might have mistimed things a little bit, because obviously they were excited to get the club back, because of course it's their pride and joy and their, you know, their ego around the club, and they want to be the biggest and the best and the loudest. But they may well have been better selling the club in 2021, and it may be a bit more difficult to sell it for the price they might have got.
I mean, it may be a question of finances and economics that they got that permission right at the start of the pandemic in 2020. Since then, it's become much, much more expensive to build stuff.
So
it may be that the deal they'd arranged at that point didn't work. Hasn't worked.
Well, this
out
is.
Since.
I mean, let's be clear. This is just pure conjecture. But it might also be any potential funder of that development, or land speculator, developer, wanting to do a deal with them, who are the owners of that piece of land, is taking a look at their track record, being expelled as directors, and thinking, well, maybe this isn't the best thing to do. But, I mean, that doesn't stop them selling it. So anyway, that's just pure speculation.
I mean, it's
speculation that we really are duty-bound to put to... It's only fair to put this to the individuals concerned, Marty, Bentley. So I'll definitely be approaching them and asking them, you know, what they make of all this. It'd be fascinating to hear their point of view.
Yeah, well, I hope you get a response. I didn't get a response.
I think last words with you, Sophie. You made actually quite a big impression. It was news around the city that their licence was being reviewed last year. Can you just explain how difficult or easy it is to actually get a review of a licence, because very few people seem to do it. I think they just think it's almost like someone else's job syndrome.
Well, I've been doing all sorts of jobs, and one of the lucky things is doing all these everyday jobs means I've met a lot of people, and I've had the chance to speak to a lot of young people, especially as I've been trying to escape from Bristol. I've returned to Bristol and been on the train with other young people that were coming into Bristol to go to Lakota, of course, and had a chat to lots of young people when I was at work, and I've chatted to people similar age to me about what they think of Lakota. So I haven't been in there, but I've had the opportunity to speak to people about, and it wasn't even trying to lead people in a conversation, just to ask people what they thought. And, you know, it's a great conversation starter. I think I may have been a little bit blacklisted in terms of the person that complains all the time. It is just a form that you fill in a license review application. And then you have to submit the reasons for your concern. So it's just a bit of form filling and paperwork. And I think I had a bit of luck at the time, and I did a lot of writing about it, and I got that review. I think the licensing team are keen not to respond to me anymore, and you know, I don't quite know under what circumstances I would be let in again for a conversation.
And also, to be fair to Lakota, they get a 4.2 review on Google, which is pretty good. Maximum is 5.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of people saying, awesome venue, what a blast we had taking over for Don Whiting's summer party. So then the next one down is actually a negative review. 2 months ago, Valerio is saying, security staff are watching over me inside the toilet cubicle, allegedly to prevent people taking drugs. Pretty sure that is not legal. In any case, highly uncomfortable to have somebody looking at you while your private parts are exposed. I've never seen security acting like that. From other reviews, it seems like they do it regularly. I'm thinking of filing a lawsuit together with other people affected. That is not acceptable. A whole range. And as I said before, with TripAdvisor, you seem to either find 5 stars or 1 star reviews for Lakota, not a lot in between. Scarlett says, not good vibes all round. If you want a good night to Brass Pig, go to the Brass Pig round the corner. I mean, the vibes, you know, I would agree. Anyway, so Andy Hillier says, a month ago, says, go if you want to be hurt or assaulted. The place should have been knocked down for flats in 2020. But there are, of course, some very, very good reviews as well. Had a great night at Tribe of Frogs, says Jess Nollies, but disappointed by the lack of consideration for women's safety. We were aggressively forced to leave our sick friend alone in the female toilets, and later in the night we were shouted at by the same person for 20 minutes for having lost a cloakroom ticket and not given back a jacket. This meant our Uber cancelled on us and we were forced to find another way home. The female toilets should be a safe space for women at the very least, and women should have the right to leave the club without trouble and find themselves a safe way home.
And then you start to wonder why there's so many young people hanging around on our side of the estate, because they don't want to hang around on the corner by Rape Alley and that. They're finishing up their night having a chat on our side because it's more safe because we looked after it.
Yes. With the nightclub particularly, maybe, Joe, you could wind up by talking a little bit about this planning, because we've got Marley Bennett, who's chairing this licensing hearing, is obviously being involved he's involved in planning as a consultant. So he may have had some interest in the planning application they're putting forward.
I don't know anything about that.
Well, what exactly is his role in this planning consultancy? Sophie's hearing.
I don't know. I know he's being paid by them. It's a pecuniary interest. I've seen blog posts he's written on their website, it's clearly something these development consultancies like to do, is get a kind of in with the council, the local planning authority.
Well, you could say it's. Yeah.
But he's. I mean, he's also. You know, he's a Marvin Rees loyalist. He's from the East Bristol loyalist kind of heartlands.
Isn't he cabinet member for housing? Is that?
No, that's Tom Reynolds.
Oh, yeah, Reynolds. Yeah, yeah, okay.
I mean, he's very young. He's only in his mid-20s, Marley Bennett. But he's got these quite serious positions.
He's quite a serious guy as well in the way that he conducts himself, because remember that the licensing meetings are all very formal, and yes. You almost may find yourself in a meeting not really quite realising what you're talking about. That was the most recent meeting. We had a councillor from Hengrove, and she was similar age to me. She said nothing. And then we had a councillor that was much, much older, and I didn't really feel that person was quite the right person. It was really a meeting mostly directed by Marley.
Okay, well, Sophie Cooper, Thorn in the Side, at least May 2022, of the Lakota, just a little bit, by getting their licence reviewed, just simply by filling in a little form. You know, it's a sort of 15-minute job, really, not more than that.
I did it on my phone because I was a bit embarrassed to use my dad's computer, and I did it on my smartphone, so it wasn't even the best one.
No, it is quite quick, but you do have to be absolutely open and public about who you are. Of course, when you're dealing with, you know, violence that's going on by bouncers, which we've been hearing about there, etc., it's not the nicest thing to have to do, but, you know, someone's got to do it. And
there is potentially, you have to sign to agree to an unlimited fine if you are submitting false information. Mm. So I was a little bit tied, you know, on the actual event, on the event of the licence review, though I was there on my own. Mm. I perhaps didn't discuss and barter as much as I could have. I just gave the information that I felt 100%
confident with. Well,
that's
pretty scary. With. You could have been, you know, slapped with a massive costs order by the recommendation of a barrister on the other side without necessarily knowing how to defend yourself. But anyway, and your thoughts, Joe Banks, local freelance journalist, on just the general flavour of Bristol's nighttime community, because it seems they're very well organised, and the interests of local residents around nightclubs like the Lakota really are falling into the background, almost irrelevant.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously, really sympathise with your situation, Sophie. And to me, one of the most pertinent and interesting things about this whole situation is the fact that, you know, none of this hasn't become public knowledge, this whole background that you've been, you know, outlining.
Yeah, I mean, it's rotation of companies, exclusion of directors, rotation of companies, exclusion of directors.
Yes.
Almost unknown.
And clearly, if you're a director at one of the few local media outlets, you know, and if you're on all the boards that are going, that the mayor likes to put people on, all this stuff helps, doesn't it?
Okay.
So that is an insight into a side of life in Bristol.
So, Joe Banks, freelance journalist from Bristol.
So you can read my stuff at joe-banks.com, or I'm on Twitter, jphbanks.
And community hero, Sophie Cooper, thanks
very
much.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.